The following podcast is a presentation of Small Biz America.
Small Biz America.
This is Making Business Work Better. And now, here's your host, Mike Miro.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Miro, your host of Making Business Work Better radio program, where small business owners come for inspiration and ideas to make their business work better, make more money, and have more free time, and hopefully achieve what they want from their business. I hope all is well with our listeners this week. Can you believe it's already the middle of April? It's tax time. I hope everybody has all that done and behind you and have those big returns coming to you. And if not, then I'm sorry. But it's that time of year. The tax man cometh. So hope everybody's making progress in that arena. Hope everything is on track so far for this year, and we're here to try to help you, give you some ideas, and hopefully help you start thinking about some of the things you need to think about in regards to becoming a strategic business owner. We've got a very special guest with us today. Alex Vantarakis is a local business owner and has a tremendous amount of experience working with small business owners. He has over 10 years of management, ownership, and acquisition experience. Has extensive experience in the areas of acquisitions, finance, franchise development, and strategic planning. Alex is active in the business brokerage industry and is a member of the Business Broker Network, the Texas Association of Business Brokers, and the International Business Broker Association. He has also served as CFO of a startup venture capital firm, as well as CFO/franchise development manager for a hotel advertising company, and he has served as a consultant, strategic planner, and operations manager. Alex has been active in the mergers and acquisition and business brokerage industry since 1997 and has represented buyers and sellers in a wide variety of transactions. He has lectured at dozens of associations on the topic of the business transfer process, and he is the co-author of Exit, A Business Owner's Guide to Selling a Company, which outlines the selling process to small and mid-sized companies. Alex received his BS in finance from Boston College with honors and his MBA concentrating in finance business development from the Babson Graduate School of Business with honors. I've known Alex for a while, and he is one of the sharpest guys around when it comes to the topic of selling and buying businesses, and he is well-respected in the local community for what he does and what he knows. So, Alex, welcome to our show today.
Well, thanks, Mike. Pleasure to be here.
You know, as we have talked in the past, I know you and I have had the opportunity to do some work together with one of my clients, actually, in the transition of her business. Tell me a little bit about the Vant Group and how you got into this type of business.
Thanks, Mike. The Vant Group is a boutique mergers and acquisition firm, or more commonly known as a business brokerage firm. We assist business owners in selling their companies. And we focus on pretty much small to mid-sized businesses, which means sales of about 1 to 30 million in sales. And we've been around for 10 years, and we're going strong. We have 8 team members here, which makes us one of the largest in the Dallas area. The way that I got into the business was kind of in a roundabout way. I bought a business about 11, 12 years ago, and I bought the business to sell it. And I was working with an intermediary, and he helped me buy it, and he helped me sell it, and I became enamored with the process. So I basically joined BBN, which is one of the associations that you had mentioned, and printed up my business cards, and 10 years later, best thing that I've ever done.
Very good. Very good. So you really kind of got your feet wet actually going through the process of buying and selling a business, and some of the challenges that presents. What's been the biggest challenge that you've had to face as a small business owner?
Well, I bought my first business when I was 27 years old, and just like every 27-year-old, I thought I knew everything about business.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I didn't know much at all. I put everything I had into my down payment, and then when payroll came on Friday, I was expecting funds to be there, and they weren't there. So, you know, the biggest challenge is not knowing what you don't know.
Right.
And at the time, what I didn't know was proper budgeting and planning. And, you know, over time, you know, you learn all of those things, but you're so busy day-to-day running your business that you forget to learn all the things that you need to know about working on your business rather than working in your business. And I really think that that's the biggest challenge, is you don't have time to work on your business and grow your business. You become a slave to your business.
Well, that's a great point, Alex. You know, one of the things that we do in our coaching program is help business owners get that time, you know, set aside that time on a quarterly basis to work on their business rather than in their business. And we've gotten some tremendous feedback from the people who have committed to the process that, you know, it makes them stop and reflect and think about those things and develop a strategy for what they want to accomplish in their business. I find a lot of business owners, like you said, are just caught in the day-to-day of running from this deal to that deal or this crisis to that crisis, and they rarely take time to figure out what it is that they need to know to take their business to the next level or even, you know, deal with some of the issues that they have ongoing. So that's a great, great point. As you go about doing the things you do, Alex, what do you think or what are some of the biggest issues that small business owners face when they get ready to sell their business?
First and foremost, the biggest and most repetitive issue that I see is a business owner has a job and not a company.
Okay.
I'll describe to you two businesses that will sell for drastically different prices, though they sound exactly the same.
Okay.
Business A and B both have about $1 million in sales, and let's say they're printing companies, and one could sell for $800,000 while one could sell for $200,000. And the difference is that a business owner, if he has not developed a strong foundation, and what does foundation mean? He has other people in the company, or he or she has other people in the company that can run the business while he's not there. That's one. Two is, if a new employee starts and all of the training is the business owner training that employee, that's not a good business. If there's not procedures in place, if there's not an employee manual in place, if there isn't a map that outlines the processes, then again, you have a job. If a business owner cannot take a vacation for fear of what would happen to their business, they have a job, they don't have a business. And that is the biggest thing that people should be thinking about if they're getting ready to sell their business, is to be able to form their business so that if they're not there, the business is moving smoothly.
That's great, great information. You know, that's one of the things we see a lot is a lot of these business owners, even though they own an entity, they really are self-employed. I mean, they're in a situation where they don't make money unless they work. And, that's a great example of why it's important that people make that shift mindset-wise from being self-employed to being a business owner where the business can run on its own. As you go about dealing with the things that you deal with, how often do you encounter the situations where the business is focused around the owner as compared? I mean, the majority of the things that come across your table, are they the situation where they're self-employed, or are they more the business is running on its own?
I would love to say that it's more the case when the business is running on its own, but unfortunately, I'd say over half are
really
people that have jobs.
Okay.
The people that are most successful at having a business that has a good value are the people that plan ahead, the people that have a good attorney to set up their documentation, a good CPA to set up their books and their financials, a good insurance person to make sure that they're covered, a good planning coach to make sure that they're on track, and just overall have more of a system and more of a company. And, you know, it's a morbid thought to think, but if a business owner was to die one day, could that business survive? That's what a question, that's a question that a business owner needs to ask himself. If they're not there, does my business survive?
And it's interesting you use that example, because I've actually seen, I know of two specific situations where the business owner actually did pass away, and the business was handed off to the spouse or to the children, and they were kind of like, okay, what do we do with this thing now? Because everything was in that business owner's head. All the information, all the relationships, there was no documentation. In one situation, Alex, the books were actually being done on a ledger sheet. I mean, the old accounting ledger paper. This is 2008, and the books were being done by hand on a ledger. And when we sit down and we try to look at information, you know, what information can we pull about what's going on in the business? We had none.
Yep.
There was no information, no infrastructure, no systems, no process, nothing. It was all in this one guy's head.
Well, what's unfortunate, he probably left hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, in his head that was never transferred, and his family was never able to reap the benefits of, you know, who knows how many years he ran that business.
Well, the business was 50 years old.
Then that is a shame.
50 years old. So pretty interesting.
Pretty interesting.
Well, as you go about, if people are interested in buying a business, they say, you know, I've worked in the corporate world for a number of years, and I've decided now it's time I want to have my own deal. What are some of the things that they need to be thinking about when it comes to acquiring or purchasing a business?
Buying a business is so much trickier and risky than buying pretty much any other type of either investment or product. Before anybody ever considers buying a business, and anybody that calls in and tells us they want to look at our offerings, I always ask them the same questions. And these are questions that buyers should be asking themselves. Why do I want to buy a business? Do you want freedom, flexibility? Do you want your ability to make as much money as your effort gives you? Exactly why do you want to buy a business? But more importantly, can you run your own business? Can you set your own hours? Can you report to yourself? Or are you so used to reporting to somebody that you won't be used to reporting to yourself and therefore not being held accountable? Obviously, I believe very firmly in people buying businesses and selling businesses, because I think it's a great way to have a great lifestyle. But it's imperative that you don't just jump into a business thinking, well, my neighbor owns his own business and he's a member of my country club and donates a lot of money, so I should buy a business. That is the wrong reason, and believe it or not, that's the reason I see most often.
There are some incredibly strong perceptions out there about business ownership, and that, you know, people perceive that you have all this freedom and you make all this money and that there's all these benefits that go with owning a business, and in a lot of cases they are, as long as the business is set up appropriately and you are more that strategic business owner rather than being self-employed. What I see a lot, and I'm sure you do too, is a lot of guys jump in. I mean, I have a client right now that worked in a corporation and bought a franchise, with the idea of accomplishing all the things you just described. And he got in, and it's like he's working harder than he ever has. He's spending less time with his family, and he's not making as much money as he did back when he had a job. And he comes to me and goes, what's wrong with this? Why is this the case? And so I think a lot of people, great points. I think a lot of people get into owning small businesses with these perceptions that probably are not very accurate.
And one thing that's important, that's very, very important, is having a job allows you to go to work at 9 and leave at 5, and you have a paycheck every other week, guaranteed. Owning a business is a lifestyle. You go in when you have to go in, you leave when you have to leave, and guess what? Guess who gets paid last? Yeah. You get paid last.
Yeah.
That's an entirely different lifestyle and an entirely different mindset. You got to be a little bit of a riverboat gambler to own your own business.
Right.
Now,
right.
The benefits are enormous. I've owned my own business for 12 years. I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. I can go on vacation whenever I want. I can take an afternoon off. I can do whatever I want to do, knowing that I'm holding myself accountable and that I'm going to do my work when I need to do my work. And I've been blessed and fortunate that I have a company, that I don't have a job. And that's because I've gotten some very good advice from different people that I mentioned before, attorneys, CPAs, coaches, insurance people. There's good advice out there. If you listen to it, you can be successful.
What are some of the things that you had to go through to make that shift mentally from being that all-inclusive, all-doing, all-knowing owner or self-employed owner to a business owner where you have to give up some of the things that you have to give up?
Well, I had to do two things. One is I had to open up my purse books because I was doing 4 or 5 jobs. I was getting all the pay, but it was too many hours for me. So I needed to start hiring people and training them to do certain functions. And that started with an operations and a procedure manual. So I basically took a month and wrote down everything that I knew. I'd like to say it took me a whole month. It didn't take that long. I didn't know that much at the time. But I wrote everything down. I put everything in procedures, and then I hired somebody and trained them on those procedures. And every time I had a new set of responsibilities that I wanted to offload, I would turn around and write a new procedure and hire a new person. Of course, you have to do it. You have to make sure that the cash flow is there to do it. But the thought process was I took how much I wanted to make an hour. And then if I was doing tasks that didn't warrant a pay of that much an hour, I hired somebody to do it. And I think that that's a very, very good rule of thumb. You should be making a certain amount of money an hour. And if you're doing tasks like cleaning up your email box and paying your bills and doing other miscellaneous tasks, if you're doing those, you're not being as productive as you should be.
Right, right. You know, that's, oh, man, that's a great point. Because a lot of people, they think, you know, well, I'll save some money if I sit here and make these copies. Or I'll save some money if I take care of sending out these letters or making these phone calls, when the fact of the matter is you actually are costing yourself money because it's keeping you from doing the things that make you money. And, that's really interesting because that's one of the huge challenges that I see with a lot of small business owners is they're kind of caught on that hamster wheel. You know, they're caught. They have to do it because they're the only ones who know how to do it. But yet they're afraid to step off because they're afraid something will get dropped or something else will one of the balls will get dropped, and they're afraid. They're afraid of turning loose of some of these things. And in regards to the operations manual, You talked about, you know, sitting down for a month and writing that. You know, it's good from the standpoint of being able to hire people and train people, but from a business valuation standpoint, why is it important to have a good operations manual?
having an operations and a procedure manual allows the transition of a business to be almost seamless. And any time that you want to sell your business, you need to put yourself in the shoes of a buyer. What would make a buyer feel that a business is more valuable? But not only that, what would make a buyer feel less hesitant to move forward and buy your business? Going back to the example with the printing companies, the ones that sold for that big of a disparity, the deciding factors not only on buying the business, but on valuing the business, on the one that was higher, specifically had to do with a good management team in place, had to do with a procedure and operational manual that allowed that buyer to look at the business and think, if I take over this business and the seller walks away and I never hear from him again, I have a Bible here that I can revert to. And that was imperative in that person's analysis, and it's imperative in a lot of analyses that give a comfort level. And that, you know, buying a business, you know, you can crunch the numbers and you can look at the business and you can do your analysis and you can ask all of your advisors what they think. But at the end of the day, it's a big psychological decision that needs to be made. Can I see myself in this business? Am I going into a business that's well run? These are all questions that go through a buyer's mind. And the more preparation and the more organized that your business is, there's no formula on how much is added in value, but that perceived value always gives a big premium to businesses that don't have plans and procedures.
Okay. All right. So it can substantially enhance the value of the business when it comes time to sell if you have that good procedures or operations manual in place.
No question about it.
Okay. All right. And let's talk a little bit about the financials. You know, you mentioned it earlier, having a good CPA. What are some of the things that you see, you know, people have had a business for 20 years and, you know, they've kind of played with the money a little bit. You know, when they need $50, they just take it out of the till. What kind of issues come up when you see that kind of things going on in a business?
We've talked a lot about training manuals and operations manuals and procedure manuals and having a good management team, and all those are vitally important. But the number one most important aspect in selling the business that a buyer makes his decision on is financials. Above and beyond the most important item. And the reason is most buyers, when we're dealing with small to mid-sized businesses or people coming out of corporate America, they're looking to do something on their own and they need to replace an income stream that they have at their current work. So every buyer is going to look at a business and analyze their financials to ascertain if they can buy the business, pay debt service, and be left with a salary that will allow them to live in the lifestyle that they're used to and then hopefully grow the business and make even more money. Without good financials, buyers aren't able to make these decisions. You know, the old adage, you can't have your cake and eat it too, applies. You know, you can't run a whole bunch of expenses through the business throughout the years and then go and try and sell your business for the maximum value.
Right.
Unless you keep a very accurate paper trail of your financials. And I'll give you an example. Let's say that for tax purposes, you own your building and you overcharge your business for rent. Well, when you sell your business, if you don't sell your building, that's what's called an adjustment to EBITDA, which means that if you're supposed to pay $2,000 a month and you're paying $4,000 a month, that extra $2,000 a month or $24,000 a year is cash flow that a new buyer would realize if he bought the business. So those are things that, you know, if you're going to work your books so that you can maximize or minimize your tax liability, you need to make sure to have everything justified and everything well taken care of in terms of having documentation. That's on the add back side. On just the financial side in general, you just need very good bookkeeping. Without good bookkeeping, without consistent financials, without classifying items the same way every year, it raises the guard of a buyer. Everything that you do every day in your business has a positive or negative impact on your value when you decide to sell. The smallest things, keeping your office clean, making sure that the way you log cost of goods 1 month is the same way you log it the next month, having your procedure manuals, and on and on and on. You're preparing for your business to sell the day that you start it or buy it.
Interesting, because some of the clients I work with, Alex, one of the things we do, especially when we're developing a strategic roadmap or a strategic plan, is we take the financials as they sit right now. And I can't tell you how many times I find these buckets of money, you know, like miscellaneous or, you know, something in cost of goods, that when you ask them about it, they're going, I don't know what that is. And sometimes it's a substantial amount of money. I had one client, it was over $200,000. And we tried to figure out what did that represent? I mean, what was in that bucket? And, you know, $200,000 into a small business, you know, that could represent 2 years of profit, you know, for a small business.
Exactly.
And we could not figure out, you know, what that represented. And so, you know, the financials are important when they're selling a business, but they're also important in the management of the business to be able to know whether or not, you know, the business is profitable or not.
I completely agree. If you don't have a plan, whether it's a financial plan or operations plan, whatever plan it might be, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
If you have inaccurate books, you may think you're making money, and then all of a sudden the bank calls and says, you know, you're delinquent on your liabilities, and you went from thinking you had a great business to not realizing that you do have a great business, but with horrible financial management, you may have to either sell or get a loan unexpectedly.
Yeah, and that brings up another good point. A lot of folks don't have any lines of credit or financial resources that they can bank on when those emergencies come up, and they do come up. You know, there are situations. I have a gentleman that I'm working with now where he lost a major portion of his distribution channel because they went out of business. And all of a sudden, you know, what was supplying this revenue, this cash flow, this sales was gone. And he hit some very serious cash flow situations and did not have any lines of credit or resources available to him to, you know, to help offset that until he could replace that sales. And it really put his business in a very treacherous position.
Fortunate that you would hope that that's a scenario you don't see often, but unfortunately that is one that you see very often. Because again, back to my first statement, people spend, and everybody's guilty of it, I'm guilty of it, I'm sure you're guilty of it, people spend time working in their business, which needs to be done, but working on their business, which is the hardest part, is always left to the end. It's always left till, well, I'll do that when I have more time. And that time never comes.
Right. Yeah, and that's why in your list of people, your list of advisors, I always encourage people to have a good financial advisor with their CPA, but if not their CPA, with folks who can provide money. I know that you know, you guys have some resources in helping people get loans and venture money and things like that, but also having a good relationship with your banker, I think, is very, very important.
Agreed.
As you go through and look at the things you look at, what are reasonable expectations for a buyer of a new business? In other words, if somebody comes out of that corporate world, they've got a big chunk of 401k money and they want to invest it in a business or do something along those lines, what's a reasonable expectation for them to get that business beginning to function and produce the cash flow that they're looking for?
If they bought a business or if they started a business?
If they bought a business.
Okay, good question. If you're buying a business and you've negotiated a fair price, and a fair price being one that was acceptable to a buyer and a seller, then you should be cash flowing after you pay your debt service from day one. Because most businesses sell off of a multiple of cash flow. And cash flow means different things to different people. For example, the way a CPA says cash flow or a business owner or an intermediary might say it differently in terms of what the definition is. So I'll explain what that is. Cash flow is your EBITDA plus your salary plus your owner perks. And your EBITDA is your income before interest, depreciation, and amortization. So it's basically how much money your business would make if you didn't have any debt and if you didn't write off anything for depreciation, plus your salary, plus your owner's perks. Okay? And businesses are priced off of that figure, and they're priced anywhere between 2 times that figure to as high as 5 or 6 times. The higher the cash flow, the higher the multiple. I'll give you an example. If you have a business that makes $100,000 a year, there's a lot of businesses that make that amount of money. So the multiple is smaller. It's probably about 2 times. Now, if you have a business that makes $500,000 a year, that's a much harder business to find because that's much more profitable than most, and that would have a higher multiple, 3, 4, or 5 times, depending on the industry. But in any scenario, if you buy a business right and you buy it for around 2 times cash flow, then from day one, if you've gotten a good line of credit at the bank and you've set up your down payment correctly, you should start cash flowing from day one.
Okay. Okay. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of people they enter into these things, you know, pretty much tying up all the resources that they have, and they forget about needing operating capital. You know, have you ever seen that before?
Well,
they used all their money and all of a sudden there's nothing to pay the bills with.
Well, not only have I seen it before, I was an unfortunate victim of that. When I bought my first business, I had $33,000 to put down. So I went online and I looked at all the businesses that took a down payment of $30,000 or less. Well, the business I wound up buying had a $30,000 down payment, and I had to pay some closing fees and some other amounts. So really, I paid about $32,500 down. And it was a good business, but just like any business, you have accounts receivable. You sell something on day one, you get paid, you know, at the earliest on day 30. Well, you sell something on day one, 14 days later, you have payroll. Well, I was in the unenviable position of having to go and borrow some money just to make my first payroll. So, yes, if without proper planning, without proper budgeting at the beginning, you can get in trouble in that. The hardest month is that first month because you don't exactly know when bills are going to come in. You don't exactly know how much you need for working capital. So it's always better to go into a business with more working capital than try to scrimp by with less.
Right. Right. You know, one of the rules of thumb that we try to advise when we work with business owners is when you are in position, and a lot of them aren't in position, but it takes a while to put this in place, is to try to, once you have a good feel for what your monthly expenses are running, and they, you know, you can figure those out, you know, based on looking at the financials and really getting a feel for, you know, what you're having to spend money on. Try to put away in some type of reserve 3 months worth of your expenses, including your salary.
That's a very good rule of thumb. Very good rule of thumb.
And what we found is the ones that are able to do this can manage those highs and lows in the cash flow without having to incur debt. Because when you get that debt, even though, you know, in a lot of cases it's necessary, that's just additional burden on the cash that's coming through the door now. And a lot of times, you know, I've seen business owners get themselves in a negative cash flow position, at least from the standpoint of them being able to even pay themselves, because they've encumbered so much debt that it's taking all the additional profits to service the debt. And all of a sudden they've gone from a situation where, you know, if they had just done a little bit of planning, if they had, when you know, the season was good and you had, you made that big sale or had that big push, and but yet they failed to put any money away, the next time that comes around, or the next time you have that dip, or the year you don't get that big sale, all of a sudden, you know, there's no funds because
True.
They've spent it all. And, you know, it's just like managing your personal finances. You've got to have some kind of emergency fund to, you know, to deal with those things that come up in running a business. And things do come up.
Very true. Very, very true. You know, I think we've probably mentioned planning and procedures about 15 times in this short period of time, and there's a reason. You know, you and I both see hundreds and hundreds of business owners, and, you know, one of the common factors in a successful business is planning.
Yeah.
We can't stress it enough, which is probably why we're trying to stress it enough.
Right. Boy, it can keep them out of the deep weeds if they'll just take the time to do it. And really focus on that. Well, Alex, a couple of things here before we get out of here. You have a couple of books, one called Entrance and the other one called Exit. If people wanted to get a copy of those books, what would they need to do?
Well, the one for Entrance is a book for buyers that are interested in purchasing a business, and the book for Exit is subsequently one for sellers, and it's a good, easy read. It's not filled with financial calculations and formulas. It's a real guide to the things that you need to look for when you're buying and or selling. And you can get it two ways. You can go online to www.thevantgroup.com. That's thevantgroup.com. Or you can call 972-458-8989 directly, and we'd be happy to get you a copy. Both books are $24.95 a piece, and I highly recommend them as a good referral source if you're looking to gain a basic understanding of the processes.
Well, as we close, Alex, what would be one piece of advice you would give a small business owner just starting out, just having bought a business and just getting going? What would be one piece of advice that said, if they don't do anything else, do this? What would it be?
Surround themselves with a good team.
Okay.
It's the best advice that I can give. Without good team members, you're going in this alone, and it's almost like going to battle, and you've got tanks and ships, and you've got all these pieces of weapons of mass destruction, and you're bringing a pellet gun with you.
Yeah.
You might as well bring in the heavy artillery.
Right.
And without that, you know, you're starting off with the potential to fail, and nobody wants to see that.
Excellent advice. Well, Alex, we've come to the end of our time today, and I just want to thank you on behalf of myself and our listeners of the Making Business Work Better radio program. We appreciate your time today. If you're out there listening to our broadcast today, let me encourage you to think about some of the points that Alex made today, because they are so valid. I mean, he's right. We both see it day in and day out, and they're all things that every small business owner, every business owner everywhere has to deal with. So you're not in this alone, and just know that we're here to help you. Alex, his website is www.thevantgroup.com. And I'm sure he would be more than happy to talk to anyone that was interested in selling their business. As I said earlier, I know he has worked with some of my clients in that process, and they've had exceptional experiences. So, Alex, thank you very much for being on our show today.
Mike, thank you very much. And this is a great venue to really add another add another arrow in your quiver, because everybody needs help. No one person can know it all. So I appreciate you letting me on the show. And like Mike said, I'm available. If you just want to just ask some basic general questions, I'm also available for that. We deal with business owners for years sometime before we actually help them sell their companies.
Very good. Well, Alex, have a great day, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today, and this concludes our show for this week. If you have any questions you would like answered on the show, feel free to shoot us an email at questions@makingbusinessworkbetter.com, and we will try to answer those questions on the phone and try to make sure that we have guests on the program that address some of the major issues that business owners face today. So on behalf of Alex and all the folks here at Making Business Work Better, we thank you for listening today, and catch you the next time we're out there. Thanks a lot. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Making Business Work Better. To find out more about Mike Miro or to subscribe to this podcast, visit us at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.